Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, I have a returning favorite guest of mine, Joanne DiMaggio. She was first on my show talking about her book, Soul Writing, Conversing with Your Higher Self, and that was on September 16, 2011. And then her second book, which was Your Soul Remembers, Accessing Your Past Lives Through Soul Writing, was on November 1st, 2013. And both of those shows were very great, very good discussion, and you can access them in our archives page on the website, byteradio.me. But today, we're going to be talking about her newest book, Karma Can Be a Real Pain, Past Life Clues to Current Life Maladies. Karma Can Be a Real Pain illustrates how ordinary men and women met their past life aspects and discovered the karmic origin of their chronic condition, resulting in healthier, happier life in the here and now and beyond. Karma can be a real pain, but lucky for us, there is a cure. Employing past life regression and augmenting the session with soul writing, the project sought to find the buried past life story behind the present-day malady. The book, which includes excerpts from the Edgar Cayce readings on physical karma, explores the experiences of 23 of those volunteers, sharing the details of the regression, the transcript of the soul writing session, and the result of the follow-up interview to determine whether the session resulted in the condition being healed, improved, or remained the same. You can find out more about Joanne and her books by visiting her website, which is www.joannedimaggio.com, and I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Joanne to the show. Good day, Joanne.
Hi, Robert. Great to be here again.
It is my pleasure. And I tell you, every time I get a little note saying that you have a book and wanted to be on the show, I just jump for joy.
Thanks for saying that.
Well, I've enjoyed all of your books. And you know, they're the kind of books that can be very helpful for people who read them.
I agree.
Well, you know, for those who may not have listened to the earlier shows, you've been professionally pursuing past life exploration since 1987, and then you started the Past Life Research Organizations in Chicago and then in Charlottesville, but you waited 10 years before doing regression work yourself. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how your interest in past life work has evolved over the span of 30 years?
Well, when I first, I should say I've always been interested in this topic from the time I was very young. As a teenager, I was reading about it. I read The Search for Bridie Murphy. That was, I think, the first reincarnation book I ever read. I was reading books by Jess Stern and books about Edgar Cayce and books by Ruth Montgomery. So it really piqued my interest. And then I love doing research. That's one of the things that most interests me. So I saw myself basically as a writer who was going to do research on these topics and present them to the public. I didn't have any intention of actually doing the regression work myself until I met Henry Bolduc. He has since passed away. He was renowned author and speaker for ARE back in the 80s and 90s. And I'd have Henry come out to Chicago to do programs for us. If he was there for the ARE, I'd have him come and do something for my past life organization. And Henry said to me, "Joanne, why aren't you doing this work? You know more about this topic than most people." And I said, well, I'm not a therapist, I'm a writer. And he goes, no, you should do this work. So I went and took the necessary courses and studied and got my master's in transpersonal studies from Atlantic University, and my spiritual mentor certification and my certified hypnotherapist designation, and started to do the work myself. And in doing so, I became more and more and more fascinated by it, about the stories that I was hearing in the privacy of my office. And it just sort of evolved from there, and paying attention to different trends. And most recently then, of course, the trend toward wanting to use this therapy to discover the origin of a chronic condition that someone was suffering with in this life.
Yeah, I just find it interesting when we, you know, have those decision points in life, you know, where there's maybe, you know, one person may suggest, you know, why aren't you doing this? And, you know, and then you go ahead and do it. And here, you know, 30 years later, you know, it's become such a major part of your life and your work and your passion as well.
Right, and I'm so grateful that Henry made that suggestion and that I pursued that course of action. Rather than just simply being an observer, now I'm a part of the healing process for these people, and there's nothing more humbling than that.
Yeah, I understand. Now, karma can be a real pain, past life clues into present-day maladies. It's your third book, like I mentioned, with soul writing being the first and your soul remembers the second. So, you know, what made you decide to, you know, focus on the physical karma aspect for this book?
Well, it's interesting. Several synchronistic events happened, one of which was I saw a shift in my regression practice, and that a lot of people were coming to me with chronic conditions and saying, you know, I've tried everything. I've done traditional medical advice and seen doctors and taking medications and all these tests, and I'm just not satisfied. There's got to be some other reason for this. So that was one thing. The other thing was I had people telling me that I should look into medical intuition and incorporate that as part of my therapy practice. Well, I knew nothing about that. I didn't really see myself doing that. So just out of curiosity, I attended a medical intuition conference that the ARE was hosting in Virginia Beach with Dr. Norman Shealy and Carolyn Mace. And when Dr. Shealy, who is a medical doctor, got up on the stage, the first thing out of his mouth practically was that he felt that all illness was past life related. So I thought, whoa, that's a big statement from a medical doctor to make. And so that plus some other synchronistic things happening convinced me that this might be something worth going into further. And also I knew that Edgar Cayce had done a number of readings, what we call the physical karma readings. So I went to the beach and I actually sat in the library and researched. They still had a card index, which tickled me to death. So I sat and looked at the card index under physical karma, and they had everything in there from acne to venereal disease. So I went through every single one of those readings to see what Cayce had told people about the source of their chronic conditions, and that, you know, that information that he supplied is still applicable today. So with all of that, at my disposal, I created this research project of my own and conducted it over a course of a year to see what would come up from volunteers of all walks of life who came to participate in the session.
Yeah, you know, the synchronicities, or I believe in your book you also mentioned that Jung called them meaningful coincidences. Those things, you know, we really need. I mean, we don't need to, but our life can be so much more enriched if we pay attention to those when they happen and you know, follow maybe the sign that's being given to us.
Exactly, and after we do a regression, I always tell my clients or my volunteers, watch for synchronicities because now you've opened up this door and the universe is going to provide you with some additional information, and you're not going to know when it's going to come or how it's going to come, but it'll come. Just pay attention to what's happening around you and see how it gives you bits and pieces of information that you can apply to make your life so much better.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been to ARE in Virginia Beach, and, you know, when you mentioned going through the, you know, the reading, I mean, that library is huge. I mean, I just, when I went there, I mean, it was, I basically, in order for me to kind of even look at some of the things, I just went through and let my intuition kind of guide me, okay, guide me to something that might be of interest to me. I mean, because it was just, it could be so overwhelming. He had such a catalog of readings that he had done on so many topics.
That library is, I'll tell you, it is second to none. And when I go there, I sometimes just go there with my little laptop. I'll sit there and I'd let the energy of all of that wisdom that's surrounding me just permeate every part of my being. I am so joyful when I am in that library there, and also in the Edgar Casey Foundation archives. There's a wealth of information in there as well. That's part of the name of the organization, ARE, is Association for Research and Enlightenment. And as a writer and a historian, I absolutely resonate to the research end of it, and there's no better place to do it than in that library.
No, I agree. You're fortunate to be near there. Well, one of the things, you mentioned that you got your master's in transpersonal studies at Atlantic University, and your thesis was based on Casey readings regarding what he called inspirational writing, in which you
right.
call soul writing. So for those who aren't familiar with the term soul writing, can you go ahead and talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Soul writing is basically a written form of meditation. So it's going through the same identical process that you would go through to go into a meditative state, which for most people is simply going into a quiet place, taking some deep breaths, becoming very, very relaxed, and just allowing spirit to whisper to them. This is, you know, you talk about prayer being you talking to God. Well, meditation is God talking to you. Soul writing enables you to take notes. So while you're in that meditative state, you just put the pen down on the paper, and you can do this on the keyboard as well, but since you're doing it with your eyes half closed, if you move over a little bit, you might be typing on the wrong keys, and then you won't be able to read anything that you wrote. But so I always do it with a pen or a pencil, whatever. And then just sitting there and listening to that still small voice and offer some guidance to you on any question that you have. I like to call it my 24-hour a day, 7-day a week phone home card that I can tap into the divine collective wisdom of the universe just by going into this meditative state, making that connection, making that phone call to my higher self, to God, to angels, to your spirit guides, whatever you resonate to, and asking for help, asking for guidance, and asking those tough questions that, you know, you don't, it's hard sometimes to get answers in a conscious state, and you'll always get an answer. So in terms of the project, I used the soul writing as the backstory. So when we were done with the regression, I said, you know, now let's ask your soul if there's anything else it could give you to explain something that maybe you question about this experience you had, or just give you the backstory and tell you some things that you didn't know. And that is usually where the aha moment comes with many of my clients. And so it's a very, very powerful and profound tool of transformation. And I always give people the option at the end of a regression to include it in their session.
Yeah. Now, first of all, is soul writing similar to automatic writing? Or, you know, because many people may have heard the phrase automatic writing. So is there any kind of, how are they similar or different?
They're very different. I think people think they're similar because they think that they're writing, that, you know, something's taking over their hand and writing. And that's one of the big differences between the two. With soul writing, Casey called it inspirational writing, but we have to remember that he was talking about it in the 20s and 30s and 40s when it meant something completely different than it does today. That's why I changed it to soul writing, because the information's coming through your soul. But with soul writing, you go into a meditative state. Automatic writing, you do not. With soul writing, your handwriting stays the same. With automatic writing, it does not. With soul writing, you consciously allow the words to appear on the paper, so you know what you're writing. With automatic writing, you do not. Soul writing is you feel like you're being very gently guided or nudged. With automatic writing, often you're being urged or compelled to do something. It's almost as if an outside force is taking over your hand and asking you to do something or giving you information that isn't always for your highest and best. So soul writing is coming from within. Automatic writing is coming from without. And that's one of the reasons that the ARE listed automatic writing as one of two no-nos in terms of pursuing any kind of psychic development. A Ouija board was the other one. They have case histories of people who got into trouble using automatic writing, and so I don't want people. I warn people about that. And if you do the safeguards, you say the prayer of protection, surround yourself with white light, you'll be just fine. But there definitely is a difference between the two.
Well, good. That's great to know because there is a whole bunch of differences between the two. So, and that's, I'm really glad that I asked the question and you clarified for us. Now, with soul writing, you went through and with people who had regression session with you, at the very end you had the soul writing component. Mm-hmm. Did having the regression first make it easier for those to do the soul writing? Because what I'm curious about is the ease of connection to the soul in the writing.
Well, they were already in an altered state of consciousness when we did the regression session, so I brought them up halfway. They were not in full conscious state when we did the writing. They were already in conversation with their soul when the regression took place, because I instruct their soul to show them the lifetime that is most impacting them. In other words, just of all the lifetimes that they've ever had, show them the one that is the origin of the chronic condition that they're facing now. So they're already into this conversation with the soul and this exchange of information going on. Then they switch from getting it visually in the regression to getting it on paper. And it's a good segue for many of them. Some of them had difficulty. Some of them would write maybe a word here or there. Some of them would write a phrase. Some of them would write a whole sentence. Some of them were going on and on for paragraphs. It just depended. And that's why I did it with them as well, because I wanted to supplement what they were getting. So I would, because I go along with them when they have these regressions, I can pretty much see what they're seeing. And so I just am already in a meditative state with them, so I just put my pen down on paper and I ask my source to provide information that would be helpful to them. And so then after the both of us write, we compare. They tell me what they got. I tell them what I got. And it's always supplementary to what they received. It doesn't repeat anything. It tells the story about the who, what, where, how, and when that they may not have gotten. And this truly is, as I mentioned earlier, this is the part where they have the aha moments, and then suddenly it all makes sense. It all kind of ties it all together in a nice bow, so they can understand it better and relate it to their own lives.
Oh, great. Now, one of the things that I like most about your books and the information that you provide is that you actually conduct a research project for your books, and mm-hmm. I think maybe that's my psychology kind of setting up testing environments in order to see exactly what kind of results you can get. I really like that. You base the information on, actual, experiences, and you kind of, make sure that you have, kind of accurate information. So with, the karma can be a real pain. How did you set up this particular research project, and who, how did you get your volunteers?
Well, I sought the volunteers from the ARE. Obviously, I am coordinator for the ARE Charlottesville chapter, so we have a very active group of Edgar Casey students here in the Central Virginia area. So I approached them, and also I attend Unity Church and approached some of those folks. And just simply asked if anybody had a chronic condition and they'd like to participate in a research project to fill out a questionnaire. Now, the questionnaire was intended to help me to whittle down the cases that I wanted to pursue or the people that I thought would be most successful at it. And as a result, I did 50 sessions over the course of a year. And only put 23 in the book because my publisher said that 50 would make the book so big that nobody would buy it. They ranged in age from 34 to 74, and they came from all walks of life. These were people who were well-respected in their various professions. I had a university professor. I had a registered nurse. I had an aerospace project manager, a defense contractor, a Navy veteran. I had nonprofit managers and writers, and I even had a former Navy corpsman with the Marines and Operation Iraqi Freedom veteran, healthcare providers. You just, you know, it ran the gamut. It was intended to bring in people who, you know, you would look at them and look at what they did for a living and you would say, well, these people aren't prone to making stuff up, to making up stories or coming up with these wild ideas about who they may have been in a previous lifetime. These were well-respected, very educated people who were, many of whom were skeptical coming in. So it wasn't that I said you have to believe in reincarnation to do this. I simply said, you know, I'm looking to do this research project. My goal was to have them tell their own story. It wasn't going to be me getting up on a box and saying to everybody, this is the truth of how this works in the universe. I wanted these people to tell their story because, you know, you could disbelieve 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 of them, but 50? I was approaching it almost like being a spiritual scientist, and I wanted to merge the physical with the metaphysical, and a research project of this kind seemed like the ideal way to do that.
Yeah, that's, you know, and I think that's, it's wonderful that you had such a diverse group, and also what I really like too is in your book you have quite a variety of maladies that people experience. So,
right.
To me, that's and multiple stories under, you know, each particular one. So, I mean, to me, it's, for anyone out there who, you know, has had physical challenges, that it would be just going through and reading the stories, I think, you know, just kind of plants the seed within the individual to want to find answers for themselves and open them up to the possibility, you know, that, you know, their physical experience may be related, you know, to some past life.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And that was what was so valuable about having people that came in with arthritis and diabetes and heart disease and liver and kidney problems and weight and digestive issues. And I had a lot of people that had head-related concerns, or they had foot, leg, or back pain, or some of them even had went into areas that I really didn't want to go into, to be honest with you, like sexual karma, drug and alcohol abuse, and mental and emotional disorders. I normally, as a hypnotherapist, I avoid that area, but here they came to my door, and I thought, okay, universe, you obviously want me to work with these people, so let's see where they take me. It's all G-rated, by the way.
well, no, and it's kind of funny, you know. I mean, when we're meant to look at an area that sometimes makes us uncomfortable, that, you know, there's a good reason for that. You know, I mean, I've been pushed to my outside my box with certain topics on my show too. That's like, okay, let me go ahead and do this. I don't know why I'm doing it, but that doesn't matter. So.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that many of these volunteers, may or may not have had experience with past lives. So for people who have not had a past life regression, who are out there listening, what were some of the concerns that some of the participants may have brought to you, or, about even going through the process?
Most of them, and I do mean this, most of them were concerned that they were going to make it all up. They were concerned that it would be a figment of their imagination, and none of it was going to be true, and so therefore, what good would it do? The other thing that they were concerned about is, what if I don't see anything? What if everything is black and you ask me to look down at my feet and I can't see my feet? Those, I think, were the two biggest concerns. And in most cases, they were relieved that that wasn't the case. I don't think anyone at the end of the session believed for one moment that they made it up, because their stories were so compelling and filled with such detail. Many of them could smell the smells around them. They could taste. They could feel. They used all of their senses in processing this information. Many of them had an emotional reaction, sobbing in the chair as we're doing this. Couldn't get over that they actually did something to somebody else that was something that in this life they would never consider doing. The ones who got absolutely nothing, there weren't very many of those. I did switch scripts so that I tried multiple times to enable them. But for whatever reason, there was a blockage there, and they weren't able to get past it. So they weren't able then to participate in the study. But that didn't happen very often. Most of the people were able to get something, some more than others, some incredible detail. Others were pretty vague. And so I had to take that into consideration when I picked the 23 for the book out of the 50, which ones had the most compelling story that illustrated what the origin was of their chronic condition, their understanding of it, and then hopefully a healing afterwards.
Yeah, that would be – those two, the making it up and not seeing anything, would have been my number one and number two, if I were to do that as well. Yeah. That's very common. Now, when you began the session with these individuals, you guided them through a body scan before the regression. So for the listeners, can you tell them exactly what that is and why did you do that?
Well, a body scan would be when I was relaxing them one part of their body at a time. In other words, I was saying, relaxing power is coming into both of your feet at the same time. Feel your feet relaxing, and as they're relaxing, I'd like you to scan your feet and tell me if there's any sensitivity, discomfort, or birthmark that's present there. And so they would stop and they would tell me whether one of those three elements was present at the time. And then we would continue all the way up their body. Many times when we do the body scan, it's almost as if the body is, or the soul is getting ready. It's the preview. In other words, they'll start picking up some pain in the area of their liver, or they'll feel a pain in their head, or a back pain or something. The birthmark question grew out of the work of Dr. Ian Stevenson, who did such groundbreaking work in the past lives of children. He was here at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, where I live, and he had written a paper about birthmarks being sort of leftovers from a wound or something like that from a previous lifetime. So I was using that information to build on. And so we did that up front. Some of them would be very vague about what they were feeling. Some of them didn't have any serious issues with the body in the present moment. And others went into great, great detail about experiencing pain in different parts of the body before the regression even began.
Okay, wow. Well, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to take just a quick break and do want to invite listeners, if you'd like to call in and ask Joanne any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And then when we return, Joanne, I want to kind of delve into a little bit more about the connection with physical illness and karma, okay?
Okay.
Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide. Books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for staying with us. And I just realized I'm going to have to update that little spot because day after tomorrow, Friday, is going to be our six-year anniversary show. So I guess I'll have to mention over 6 years and 1,200 shows. And so if you're out there listening and you have a chance to stop by on Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, stop in. I'm going to talk about some of my favorite shows over the last year and give you some suggestions for reading and just to improve your life. Well, today, again, my very special guest is Joanne DiMaggio, and we're talking about her new book, Karma Can Be a Real Pain, Past Life Clues to Current Life Maladies. And again, you can find out more about this particular book, about Joanne and her other books, by visiting her website, which is www.joannedimaggio.com. And again, there is a direct link to that website in the show page description. So with that, we're back to the show. Joanne, thanks for staying with me.
My pleasure.
Okay. Well, you know, you mentioned birthmarks, you know, as far as, you know, kind of a past life, current physical connection. One of the things I wondered, you know, with the doctor who said that all diseases were directly related to past life. What is your view of the DNA connection to illness? You know, a lot of times, you know, we'll find that, you know, within, like women and breast cancer and the BRCA gene, you know, that there is a genetic connection to illness. So how does that fit into the past life, karma, physical illness aspect?
Well, I think it's a soul by soul case, really, because you determine whether or not you're going to go through that experience again for whatever reason to learn mm-hmm. the lesson that you did not learn before. Some of it is pretty much tit for tat. Some of it, like Edgar Casey talked about a man who in this life was blind, and he said, well, in your past life, you had blinded your enemies with hot pokers. A woman was facing weight issues, and he said it was your attitude in a previous life. You used to make fun of people who had weight issues and had to exercise, and so now you're dealing with that yourself. A lot of that is what I found in my research. There's a lot of evidence that's out there now that shows that old traumas that were inherited, you know, from a previous lifetime do imprint themselves in the living body and as rashes or deformities or birthmarks, as I said earlier, or weaknesses in certain limbs or organic disorders, you know, heart issues, just a repetition, sometimes just as a reminder of the situation that came up in the past that you don't want to repeat again. So that was the case of an asthma victim that I had in my previous book, who was suffering from asthma in this life, and in his previous life he had suffocated in Pompeii. And in the previous life, he had been doing, he was a diviner in fire. He could look into the flames and see the future, but he was very pompous and arrogant, and people didn't believe him. And so consequently, he had tried to tell everyone to evacuate, and they didn't, and they died. And he went into the caves, and he died with them. He suffocated with them from guilt. In this lifetime, he's writing books. He's getting up in front of people. And the asthma was the trigger to say to him, don't be arrogant like you were before, because it's important that people believe you. And so once we did the regression and we did the soul writing, and the first sentence he wrote was asthma, the result of seared lungs, which didn't come up at all in the regression. It only came up in the soul writing. After that, he said that the asthma disappeared and he never had to deal with it again. And he was already in his 60s when this happened. So yes, a lot of it is an imprint that that we have brought in with us. You know, if you think if you believe in reincarnation, you know, with the law of karma, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, then you have to include the body in that plan, and that's where the physical karma comes in.
Yeah, you know, in this also, while I was reading the book and thinking about, you know, the genetic aspect, you know, it seems that, you know, also there are very often you know, physical maladies that are familial, you know, kind of passed down family, and it just made me wonder that if, you know, it's the soul group, you know, that we may have, mm-hmm. that little soul family, so to speak, mm-hmm. that it was it's a common element and experience that may be part of that, you know, bringing it into this particular life experience.
Right, because you choose your family, you choose your parents when you're in that pre-life session. You decide, you know, this family would give me the perfect environment in which this condition would occur. Now, sometimes souls choose a body for a different reason. If they decide to live in a damaged body, it doesn't necessarily have to involve a karmic debt that they're paying. But it could be, not because they've done something or an injury to somebody else, but it could be that they made that choice because it's a learning path to another type of lesson. In other words, they could be providing a very valuable lesson to the people around them. How are the people around them reacting to them in this body? So there's it's very, very fascinating, the levels of it, and how it all fits together and works is just a wonderful example of the just nature of the universe.
Yeah, I've thought about that, you know, quite often. It seems that some of the strongest spirits, you know, are those who are in, you know, bodies that are challenged. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, it is the awareness and the compassion that they bring to those around them that really seems to be kind of like amazing to me. It's like it's a life purpose.
Yeah, they're very advanced souls, and it's good for us to remember that and not judge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, one of the things, Judith, and I wondered about this, is that, you know, we in the book you talk about the past life karma and, you know, the current physical maladies. Now, you know, every day through all of our actions, we really are kind of creating karma in a way. So I was wondering, you know, in our current life, you know, in some of the, you know, the karma that we're creating, you know, just through our actions and choices, is that, I mean, can there be such like a real quick turnaround, so to speak, that karma we're creating can lead us to, you know, current life ailments?
Well, I think that it certainly can. I think in the cases of the people that I interviewed, the when they found out the origin of the issue that they were dealing with, it very often disappeared. It was almost as if just simply knowing about where it came from and doing the forgiveness work around it, whether to forgive themselves or to forgive others, would dissipate the impact that it had, if not heal it completely. Most of the people who said that their condition remained the same after the regression session said that even though physically they felt the same, they had a shift in their perspective, and they were looking at their challenge from a different point of view. And in doing that, it lessened the impact that it had on them. So it was definitely a benefit to almost everybody who went through the project. Some people, like I said, had an overnight, practically spontaneous healing. Others had significant improvement. Some stayed the same. I had two people who actually got worse, but they were at a point physically that they really were beyond the ability to just heal it based on knowing. I think one mm-hmm. of them had a hip replacement, and another one had Crohn's disease that did go into remission, but then it came back. So everybody's story was different, but it just the knowing of it was tremendously healing for the vast majority of people in the project.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, that aspect of the awareness of the origin and its effect and its ability to either minimize or eliminate, you know, the malady. And it just makes me wonder, you know, if we were able to have better past life recall, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, mm-hmm. maybe not so much of a veil, you know, that maybe we would live much, you know, much healthier and much longer.
Right, right. Well, you know, we're the sum total of all that we have ever been. We don't work on all of our issues in every lifetime because it would drive us mad. So we only work on a few of them at a time. We choose which ones we want to work on. We come in knowing that these situations very well are going to present themselves. And, of course, it's not always a physical situation. It could be anything else. It could be relationship issues, finance issues, anything that requires, you know, a cause and effect sort of approach to it. But really, the people that undergo this and who have that spontaneous healing, their lives are changed forever. And, you know, I'd heard about spontaneous healings. I had never experienced one until that case with the asthma that I mentioned to you. And then, of course, in my book, there are some people who also had that. One in particular was a 71-year-old psychiatric nurse who was suffering from night terrors. And after the regression, she never had a night terror again. And I saw them a couple of weeks ago at my book launch at Unity, and the husband came up to me and he took my hand and he said, "I can't thank you enough for how you've changed my wife's life and my life." And, you know, that's such a humbling experience when that happens, and makes it all worthwhile, really.
It does. It does. That is wonderful. Now, during the regression, you mm-hmm. took the participants through their death scene, asking mm-hmm. what their last thoughts were before they left, the soul left the body,
right.
And any regrets. So can you talk about, you know, why you did this and maybe what were some of the answers? What were some of the you know, experiences that people had.
Well, it amazes me that many times the last thought that your soul has as your soul leaves your body sets up the next lifetime. So be very careful what you're thinking at the moment of death. I had a woman who came to me. She had head-to-toe psoriasis, and we took her back to a life in which she was a prostitute in the Old West. And when I asked her to go through her death scene, when her soul left her body, I said, what were your last thoughts? And she said, I don't want to be touched. And so in this life, guess what she does? She manifests a skin condition in which nobody touches her. So it's that sort of amazing correlation. She didn't know when she came into my office that she had been a call girl in the Old West, much less that she had made that, you know, that request to the universe, I don't want to be touched anymore. So most people, their last thoughts, and I know you've heard this before, but it has to do with love. I should have loved my family more. I should have spent more time with them. I shouldn't have put my work first. I should have treated my parents differently. A lot of it is that level of personal reflection that I would say 8 out of 10. That's what they say. Some of them, you know, will say, "What a damn waste of time this life was." I mean, so
wow.
You know, it's very interesting. What person who had diabetes in this life, her last thoughts were that she didn't have enough sweetness in her previous life. I didn't have – there wasn't enough sweetness. Well, now you got plenty of sweetness, don't you? So so it's really quite fascinating to do a correlation between – I suppose that could be a whole book by itself, right? What were your last thoughts and what happened because of that?
Yeah, I'll be talking to you in a couple of years.
<You're>
Yeah, well, you know, to me that's really interesting, the idea that, well, first of all, whatever that final thought is kind of sets the stage, and it seems that, whatever that fleeting final thought is that that's like the soul maybe recognizing, an unfinished plan. In a way,
right.
that it's like, okay, but this is for the next time around, this is where we're going to go. Regarding, quite often people talk about, regrets. And then there's that unfinished business. So it seems that, between the two, those are, they're very different things in my mind. The regrets are things that I, didn't do that I would like to have done or mm-hmm. Should maybe, but and then the unfinished business is just the plan. I just didn't complete what I wanted to complete, and I guess like we say, you have to kind of be aware of what your fleeting thought is, but boy, that's going to be tough to try and set it up for that moment.
Well, yeah, right. At that moment, you're not exactly thinking, well, I better be careful what I say because the next lifetime I'll be manifesting this. But, I mean, those are the kinds of questions that I do ask at the end of the regression to just do. I like them to do a parallel, to look at the parallels and the behavior patterns between their previous selves and their current selves. What is it about their previous life that's similar to their present life? And are there any people from that life that are in their life now? Knowing that we change sexes and we change our relationship issues and stuff like that. But still, we do travel as a soul family, as you brought up earlier, a little soul pod. And so these people agreed to come with you in this life. So why did they do that? What role are they playing? What lesson are they enabling you to learn? So all those kinds of introspective questions come right at the end of the regression for them to sort of for them to be able to tie in that what they just saw very, very, very much has something to do with who they are now. It's not separate and apart from them. It's just a continuation. The soul continues, even though we change bodies. It's the same soul, and it has a record of everything we've ever said or done or thought. So all of that plays into who we are in the here and now.
Yeah. So, when you asked, that question at the end about if there were any people from mm-hmm. you know that life and their current life. Were there any particular? I mean, what did you find? Did you find that maybe it was one or two significant people or many?
Yeah.
What kind of things came about?
Sometimes in a regression, people do not see a lot of other people. They may mm-hmm. only identify one or two people in that life. But I tried to get them to at least zero in on their parents and their siblings and a spouse if they are old enough where they married and had and their children if they had a family. I had one woman who her name was Emma, and she regressed to a life in 18th century France. She was a ballerina, and she caused her rival to trip and break her leg. Well, physically, she's suffering from sciatica in this life, and so it's replicating the injury that she caused this other this rival ballerina. But in addition to that, that rival ballerina is now her daughter, and so now she has to deal with the relationship that she has with her daughter, which is basically has come to be a retribution for payback for what this woman did to her in the previous life. So there's a case where you know, someone that you did some harm to has come back, and now you have a chance to make it better. Now you have a chance to heal that relationship and resolve that karma, so you'll be free of it and you won't have to deal with it again. So that's, but many times it's husbands and wives who switch roles. So the husband in the past life becomes the wife in this one. That happens a lot. A lot of parents show up again in the present life because you're dealing with parental relationships, and that's a difficult mm-hmm. one. So yeah, it's very fascinating.
It is. Now, in the course of your research in talking to the 50 or in particular 23, what was maybe any surprises, or maybe what to you, what were maybe one or two of the most memorable, you know, regressions and experiences in the physical element?
Well, I think one of the ones that I found really fascinating was a fellow who came in suffering from arthritis. His name was Gary. He's 68 years old. And he had arthritis only in his thumbs, no other place on his body. And he regressed to a previous life in 1832 in Virginia. He was a 35-year-old man named John. He had a wife named Sarah. He had 6 and 8-year-old sons. And when I asked, by the way, the most significant part of the regression is the middle part, in which I asked their soul to scan that life. Once I get an identity of who they are, where they are, and all of what they look like, I'll say, scan that life and come up with the one significant event that was so important that it made an imprint on your soul and you brought it in with you. Well, Gary goes back to a lifetime, well, goes back to John's life, and when he was an officer in the 32nd Virginia Infantry during the Civil War. And John used his saber to strike at the hands of his opponents, and he severed the thumbs of a man in the Union cavalry. So there you see the connection between the actions that he took in the past life, and now he's got arthritis only in his thumbs.
Wow.
And so I found that fascinating. The other ones I found fascinating are the ones that started to slip into a foreign accent. Emma, the one that I told you about, the ballerina, she did the entire regression with a heavy French accent, even though in this life she's as American as you and I. And I found that really interesting, that she struggled with the language. I mean, she just as if she were learning English, she would say something with this heavy French accent, and then she would stop and say, how do you say that word? Which was fascinating to me.
Wow.
And I had another one who did a very heavy Southern dialect, and I could barely understand what she was saying, or he was saying. So those were all surprises to me. And I also had one fellow who was claimed to be famous in a past life. He said he had been Stonewall Jackson and William Wallace, who was Braveheart. And that doesn't happen very often. Right? Most people are John Does, and you know. But he was very compelling, very, very compelling story. He didn't go back to either one of those lifetimes, but he did correlate the injuries that those personalities had with what he was dealing with now. He actually went back to 38 AD in Judea. So his is a very fascinating story. And as a matter of fact, when he said it was 38 AD in Judea, I asked him if he had known Jesus Christ. He wasn't sure. He was sort of struggled with that a little bit. So if you read that chapter on Jack, which is under the liver and kidney chapter, you will I think you'll find that a really compelling story.
Well, great. Yeah, that is fascinating. I mean, you know, going through and doing those regressions and hearing those stories, I mean, it's almost like you have a movie kind of being played before you each and every time with, you know, so many unique characters and locations and time settings.
Yeah, I have a front row seat, and I'm blessed. I thank them for entrusting their past life journey to me. Because I go along with them and I see what they see, so I sort of get a bird's eye view of what's going on, and that enables me to help them see the bigger picture of the purpose of their soul showing them that particular lifetime.
Wow, that's just great. Well, we're down basically to the end of the show here, Joanne. So, just one last question: are you working on anything in particular now?
I am, actually. I'm just finishing a book that's called Precious Boy, Edgar Cayce and the Karmic Journey of Thomas Jefferson Davis. And it's a story about Thomas Jefferson Davis, called TJ, who came to live with Edgar Cayce when he was only 3 days old and stayed there for on and off for the 9 years until Mr. Cayce died. And all the things that he's still alive, by the way, and not Mr. Cayce, TJ is, and all the things that he saw, the journey of his family and their interactions with the Cayces, and the fact that Edgar Cayce had said in a life reading for him that he had been the reincarnation of Thomas Jefferson and Alexander the Great, and what that does to a three-day-old baby who grows up under that weight of that how do you live up to that, right? So his life has been quite interesting, and I'm pretty much finished up with that, and hope to get that out within the next 6 months or so.
Well, great. Well, I look forward to reading that one, too. So that's going to be a fascinating one. Well, thank you, Joanne, for your time today. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
My pleasure as always, Robert. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you. Again, everyone, today, my very special guest has been Joanne DiMaggio. We've been talking about her book, Karma Can Be a Real Pain, Past Life Clues to Current Life Malady. And again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is joannedimaggio.com. And again, there is a direct link to that website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.